You are listening to the Tiny Giant Losses podcast. Tiny Giant Losses is a collection of resources empowering women to heal after reproductive loss of any kind, including miscarriage, stillbirth, infant loss, giving up a child for adoption, termination, infertility diagnosis, and the difficult decision to live a childless life. Learn more at patreon.com/tinygiantlosses and at tinygiantlosses.com. Hello, hello, beautiful baby lost mamas. This is Lindsay from Tiny Giant Losses, welcoming you to the 10th and final episode of 2016. It has been a big year for Tiny Giant Losses. We launched on Patreon, got a website up and running, started this podcast, and reached thousands of women like yourself who have experienced reproductive loss and are ready to walk their healing paths. It has been an honor to do this work, and I look forward to what 2017 brings for Tiny Giant Losses and for you. In the meantime, let's take a look back on 2016's episodes in this hour, starting with a recap of the exercises we've shared together. Later, we'll cover step zero, the final step in the steps of healing, refresh your memory on our top reviews from 2016, list all the celebrity baby losses we've shared on the show so far, and replay a few of the most inspiring quotes shared by interviewees on the show thus far. So let's get started with the exercises. We've shared a total of 9 exercises this year. Each one is a powerful means of healing. You don't have to actually do them all as a practice, but having them in your toolkit makes walking your path all the easier. And trying each one out at least once is a great way to get it into your toolkit. This review of the resources so far is a way to spark your memory and your imagination, to remind you of what you already have on hand for healing and growth. So, in episode 1, we did a simple breathing exercise. The point wasn't so much to breathe in as to breathe out fully. We covered a great way to do this right off the bat. Pretend you're blowing out birthday candles. That kind of full exhale relieves stress and tension, releases pent-up anger, and allows you to breathe in more fully afterward. So let's all do it now. Ready? Feels good, right? Okay, one tool down, 8 to go. In episode 2, we did another breathing exercise. We started by unhinging our jaws. Picture a snake's jaw unhinging and relax your jaw fully. Then we breathed in on a count of 4, held our breath for a count of 4, and breathed out on, guessed it, a count of 4. So this is so easy. It's almost easy to forget that it's an effective tool for dealing with stress and overwhelming emotions. Let's all do it together once or twice. In, 2, 3, 4, hold, 2, 3, 4, out, 2, 3, 4, in, hold, and out fully. Great, simple. In episode 3, we shared laughter yoga. There are lots of ways to get the laughter started in groups, with recordings, on your own, with a partner, with a funny movie even, but it doesn't really matter how you get going. The point is just to laugh, even when it seems like life is a tragedy. It does a world of good for your mind, body, and spirit, and if you haven't tried it yet, then I challenge you to try it this week. If it sounds too silly for you, then it's exactly what you need to do. In episode 4, we spent 1 minute doing mountain pose or tadasana, which is a simple yoga standing posture. To do it, you simply stand up straight, toes gently touching, feet parallel, heels will be slightly apart. We ground down by lifting our toes up, pulling them down, tucking our tailbone slightly, releasing our shoulders back and down. And then, this detail is important. We let our tongues and our throats soften. I always feel a big change when I do that part. And then we stay with the feelings that arise as we gaze forward, and our bellies grow soft, and breathe into our belly. This pose is both powerful and receptive, which is a great combination for baby loss healing in my experience. And then we have episode 5, the halfway point so far, and an ideal exercise for cooler weather. It's called inward turning. To do it, you place your hands over your heart center. Focus on feeling. Take a few moments to just rest with the sensations here. And then, patiently, gently, and ask your heart what it needs now. You might get an answer right away, and you might not. Keep listening for the next 24 hours. Keep waiting for an answer and see what you find. In episode 6, we breathed plants. This is so easy, and it gives such a strong sense of interconnectedness. All you do, literally, all you do is you sit or you stand close to a plant, then a few handstands is ideal, and you breathe for 10 minutes a day. So easy, yet it opens up a world of possibilities. In that time you share with your new plant friend, see what develops. Might surprise you. In episode 7, we focus on hugs. We talked about all sorts of hugs and what they mean and how you can get more hugs into your routine and all of that. But today, let's just take a moment to hug ourselves. It might feel silly at first, but once you relax into it, it's deeply soothing. So, wrap your arms around yourself and keep hugging as I talk about episode 8's exercise. This one is called Loving Kindness Meditation, Metta Bhavana, or more simply, Metta. In its simplest form, you pick two people and you wish them happiness. This super easy exercise can bring a lot of love and joy and connectedness into your life, even when you're feeling a lot of pain. So let's try it now. Pick someone in your life who you care about. Think, I wish them happiness. Now feel it. I wish them happiness. Stay in that state for a minute. Just rest in it. Just feel that sense of wishing happiness for another person. And then move on to another person. In this simple form, it only takes 2 minutes a day, super fast, and it can be absolutely life-changing. Forget about New Year's resolutions. Start this one today. In episode 9, we covered Byron Katie's The Work. Basically, it's a method of self-inquiry in which you ask yourself about troubling thoughts and find healthier thoughts with which to replace them. The core question to begin with is that true? Like, really, actually, 100% certifiably true? Yes or no? You can review The Work as a baby loss healing tool in episode 9, or get a summary of it on the Patreon blog. I've included a link in the podcast description. Now we're all caught up on exercises. As promised, these 9 tools are all simple and effective. I hope you're able to incorporate each one into your personal healing toolbox and use them as needed in 2017 and beyond. Next up is our 7th and final step of healing in the 6 steps of healing, step 0. It's also called Do Nothing or Serenity Medicine. It's not the same as not doing anything. It's an active form of healing, even though it doesn't sound that way. I find that doing nothing helps me tap into suppressed grief, helps me gain insights into my healing process, even helps me take the time I need to cry or to feel whatever I'm feeling. Examples of doing nothing include sleeping, meditating, turning off your computer and all your other devices, taking time for silence, and just breathing. As you can tell, these are all so simple that I hardly even need to explain them. I mean, I could tell you, try turning off your devices for an hour and see how that goes, or try taking a full day, but really, there's not a lot to elaborate on with these. And yet we so rarely take the opportunity to actually do these things. So today I'd like to focus on a way to open up that opportunity in our lives. It's a matter of indulgence. So often we women tell ourselves that we should do things. Maybe we should eat better, step three. Or we should have a healing ritual, step two. Or we should journal every day, step one, or whatever it is. And that does not feel good. In fact, it feels pretty crappy. So I'd like to help all of us flip that feeling around with a simple start at step zero. You can expand out to all the steps from there. And really the most important thing is it's not a should. It's an indulgence. And it's so fast and it's so easy that you might be shocked that you haven't been doing this multiple times a day since childhood for your whole life. This indulgence at step zero is a single mindful breath. For those who aren't familiar with the term mindful, it could be conveyed simply as aware or free from distraction, or maybe even focused, but in a more open, allowing way than we usually think of the word focused. So without thinking of anything else, without doing anything else, take a moment to take a single breath. No agenda, nothing special to accomplish, just breathing. And yet when we focus on it alone, it becomes much more. It's a doorway into calm, into peace, connectedness, into love. Take a moment. Stop everything else and breathe. Feels great, right? Indulgent. Remember that feeling and allow yourself to tap into it whenever you need to. After all, it only takes a moment. It's easy and it's free and it's not like you weren't going to breathe anyway. So allow yourself the indulgence of breathing mindfully once a day. Make it a habit you love to keep and see where it takes you in this coming year. Up next, in lieu of a new two-minute review, I'd like to remind you of a few of the best of 2016 in this episode. Let's start with one of my personal favorites, the book Grieving Parents, Surviving Loss as a Couple. This book is written with so much love, awareness, compassion, and wisdom. You may remember hearing its author, grief therapist Natalie Himelrich, speak here on the show. I recommend it to anyone who is going through reproductive loss with a partner, and especially for those who've experienced the loss of a multiple, which Natalie also experienced, infant loss, or stillbirth. Another of my faves is There Was Supposed to Be a Baby by yoga teacher Catherine Noblet Keating. This book is chock full of exercises, stories, wisdom, and compassion. There Was Supposed to Be a Baby also has an accompanying set of cards you can use to fuel your healing work, and I highly recommend those as well. And in terms of memoirs, I've got to recommend Layla's Story by Vanessa Gorman, the filmmaker behind Losing Layla. This book follows Gorman through her own childhood, a consuming desire for children, an abortion, an infant loss, a rainbow baby's early life, and the start of another pregnancy. It's poetic, it's erotic, it's even deeply funny at times, and it has a keen self-awareness that I find lacking in many of the baby loss essay compilations. And then we have the movies. There's Rabbit Hole by filmmaker John Cameron Mitchell, starring Nicole Kidman, who has personally experienced multiple miscarriages and other forms of loss. It's a beautiful film that deals with the tragedy of child loss with any of the trappings of a sad, sad, sappy, sappy story. Luna is another fiction film about reproductive loss. It follows two couples on a weekend by the sea sometime after one couple lost their newborn son. It also touches on the topics of adoption and abortion. It's surreal, beautiful, and touching. This is a film that works away on the subconscious to give you healing on multiple levels. Then there's the Beyoncé documentary Life is But a Dream, which follows Beyoncé through a few years of her life, including her miscarriage and the subsequent birth of her daughter, Blue Ivy. If you're in need of a strong baby loss role model, this film is a great pick. And of course, The House I Keep by Jana Allen, who we also interviewed here on the podcast. This short film about miscarriage says more in 10 minutes than most films say in 90. Love, love, love this film. So if you haven't checked these out already, then you have some homework for getting the year started off right. Pick a few that appeal to you and seek them out. And today's celebrity baby loss is another summary. It's just a simple listing of celebrities whose losses we've covered so far, along with the types of losses and any living children that they may have. Singer, actress, international superstar Beyoncé. Miscarriage followed by one living daughter. Actress and film producer Nicole Kidman, ectopic pregnancy, multiple miscarriages, infertility diagnosis. She has two living biological children, one from a surrogate pregnancy. She's also adopted two children. Actress Elizabeth Banks, infertility diagnosis, two live births via a surrogate. Singer-songwriter and activist Tori Amos, multiple miscarriages, one living daughter. Actress, activist, author, comedian, and screenwriter Emma Thompson, multiple miscarriages, IVF, one living biological child, one adopted child. Singer-songwriter and activist Annie Lennox, one stillborn son, followed by two living daughters. These women have lived through their losses and learned to thrive. If they can do it, then you can do it too. And this month's patron reward on Patreon, we go into much, much more detail about looking to other baby loss mothers who have gone before you for healing and inspiration. And I share my own personal resources for my own healing as an example. If you haven't become a patron already, you can access this reward as well as many, many others by giving as little as $3 a month. Learn more at patreon.com/tinygiantlosses. Now I'd like to look back on some of the wisdom that was shared in the podcast this year. We were delighted to have so many amazing guests here on the show. Here are just a few snippets from each episode to remind you of what each interviewee had to share. In episode 1, we spoke with herbalist, author, and wise woman Susan Reed. Here's some of what she had to say about the 6 steps of healing.
First, do no harm. It seems to be pretty universally accepted that if we're going to engage ourselves as healers, the very first thing we should do is not hurt people.
Yeah.
They come to us sick. They come to us hurt. They come to us injured. And those are emotional, psychic, physical, social injuries and hurts. And without care, we can add to that burden of hurt and pain. So I asked myself, of these remedies that I was surrounded with, which were the gentlest and the safest?
And then Susan gets into the different steps of healing and speaks about steps 0 through 3. When she reaches step 4, this is what she has to share.
And between lifestyle medicine and alternative medicine is a great divide. The first 4 medicines, serenity medicine, story medicine, mind medicine, and lifestyle medicine, always make us healthier. These medicines are quite capable of relieving pain, dealing with problems, restoring our health to us. But they also help us to maintain health. So we regain and maintain health whenever we are engaging in the first 4 medicines. The last 3 medicines, alternative medicine, pharmaceutical medicine, and high-tech medicine, always injure and erode our health.
And yet sometimes some of these steps may be necessary for women who are experiencing or have experienced baby loss.
Exactly. That's why there's 7 medicines. Those medicines, but neither are we going to choose to start there.
Right.
If we have a choice, We want to start with serenity medicine. Mm-hmm. We don't always have a choice. Certainly, if I'm at a birth and a woman is hemorrhaging, I'm not going to stand there and lecture her on nettle infusion. Nor am I going to go in the kitchen and set up a nettle infusion, which won't be ready for 4 hours.
Right.
I'm going to give her a dropper full of shepherd's first tincture under her tongue and stop the bleeding. Mm-hmm. Then we can set up a quart of nettle infusion.
And a little later in the interview, Susan shares her best advice for dealing with depression after baby loss.
And one of the problems that we can have when we have had a giant, tiny loss is depression.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that can take many forms. That can take the form of, I'm going to crawl under the bed and eat worms, major depression, to, I'm just really not very interested in anything, but I'll, you know, pretend. Yeah. Kind of a, you know, moderate depression to, I'm just fine, but you don't do anything and you don't feel like eating and your sleep is disturbed, and that's still depression.
Yeah.
And we know that the greatest, easiest, most effective way to counter all states of depression is to be active.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In fact, when we sleep, our brain makes depressive substances. That's why we don't move when we're sleeping. And so the more we sleep, the more depressed we get. So it is a direct counter to the depressive states that we can enter into when we need to be grieving.
Mm-hmm.
Grief is an active state. Depression is an inactive state.
Mm-hmm.
And lifestyle medicine, drinking the infusions and moving in whatever way pleases you, is, to my mind, one of the best ways to be sure that we move into grief and don't get stalled out in depression.
In episode 2, we spoke with grief therapist Natalie Hinovich. Here's some of what she had to share.
I would probably say that, from my perspective, there is as many responses and reactions to grief as there are people experiencing the loss.
Mm.
Obviously, there's responses that you can sort of group together, or, as in my book described, you can look at male and female ways of responding to grief, and they obviously stereotypical, however they come in groups very often.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, what I say to people often is you only have your own experience, and that's as unique as the person that you have lost.
Mm.
It's also important that, you know, emotional reactions are just one way to express or experience grief. There's also other ways, and so specifically now, after looking at male and female, in general, females experience a lot of emotional reactions, whereas male might experience less of that, and so that can lead into the common misunderstandings between a couple or parents who have lost a child, where the child loses the same incident, the same stress that they're experiencing.
Mm-hmm.
However, their experience or their reactions is completely different.
And then Natalie also speaks on meaning and faith after loss.
I mean, there's an understandable search for the meaning of the loss.
Mm-hmm.
And in that, I think one important point is that the person who has experienced the loss is allowed to add any meaning. So it's like their right. So if they believe that it's God who needed another angel, then they can say that. But it's really important not to, from the outside, to put any meaning or place any meaning onto the loss.
Mm-hmm.
Because then that can be really like misplaced.
Yeah.
But also changes in their belief. Some people lose their faith. Some people you know, have new things that they start to believe as an experience of that.
Mm-hmm.
People have experienced or have expressed that they experienced the child's presence in some form or another. Like many parents have an occurrence or a greater occurrence, or they just notice more, for example, butterflies, if they associate that, or hearts. That's some of the things that we see often in terms of their faith or their religion. They question God, as an example, if it's Christianity, how, like, the common question would be, how can a God allow that, a good God? And often people obviously have, in terms of their religion or their faith, a desire or a wish that they will see, or believe that they will see their child again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so it's not about, you know, suggesting or thinking that someone needs a religious faith or anything as a help. It's just really, it depends on the person and what they believe and what helps them. So like any other tool, religion can be a healthy, appropriate way, but it can also be misused in unhealthy and inappropriate ways. As I said before, in terms of people suggesting to them, well, just come and pray with us. It's really for the person who experienced the loss to decide what is helpful for them.
In episode 3, trauma therapist Persephone Maywald shared the following.
But it's obvious when you think about it that when we attempt to heal our emotions, there's a way that all we can do is be willing that this happen and do whatever seems to support that process. But basically, the process has a life of its own, and that's the innate healing force that's within us. And the way we tap into this process is by invoking the emotions or the conditions of compassion and curiosity and acceptance and understanding. And these are what I call higher states of consciousness. They're not our normal emotional states. And, you know, it's said that a problem cannot be fixed at the level at which it exists. And this is true of our emotional life. So we tap into these higher states and we bring them to our emotions. And when we do that, we find that our emotions spontaneously heal into places of more of peace, of relaxation, of understanding, and the emotions lose their hold on us.
Persephone then goes on to describe how understanding is ultimately the healer in situations of trauma surrounding baby loss.
Yes, and when I say understanding, as you point out, I'm talking about more than intellectual understanding. I'm also talking about deep understanding at the emotional level, which means that you truly tap into the emotion and you really feel it in your body, in your heart. And I'm also talking about body understanding, which means that you understand and experience the body sensations that go with a particular emotion. So we're talking about deep understanding here. And as we understand not just the mind, heart, and body components of an emotion, but also the history of that emotion. Like, how come that emotion arose in my life? When did it arise in my life? What part of me feels that emotion? What was happening at the time that emotion first arose? Mm. When we understand all of that, it seems that understanding just brings relaxation. It's like, ah, okay, I understand that now. Okay, and given that understanding, it gives us a sense of how to work with that emotion. So that's basically the process.
In episode 4, Dr. Jessica Zucker, the fertility psychologist behind Instagram's hashtag #IHadAMiscarriage, shared this.
I was particularly concerned and sort of outraged when I learned about the flagrant statistics out there related to shame, self-blame, and guilt following pregnancy loss.
Oh.
And I had also, of course, heard about this endlessly in my private practice as a clinician. But until I went through my own 16-week loss, I hadn't, you know, sort of considered how outlandish these statistics were and how concerning they are given the emotional and even the physical landscape, you know, following miscarriage. The more we share and the more we commune around these types of issues, the more support we may feel and therefore, you know, hopefully promoting this idea that shame and self-blame can kind of melt away. This seems like an important time to kind of stand up with the hashtag, you know, with this sign that says I had a miscarriage, because the more we feel comfortable doing this, the more others will feel comfortable doing this. But, you know, even more importantly, it can help women understand that they're just not alone. I think because there's so much silence and secrecy, too many women are reporting feeling, you know, like they don't know anybody else who's gone through this, when in fact there's just no way that that's possible given the statistics.
Yeah. And then in episode 5, we spoke with Jana Erwin, the filmmaker behind The House I Keep. She said,
poetry has always been kind of a go-to place for me whenever I'm in crisis, just writing the poetry. So I wrote the poetry, and through that, there was came up a repressed memory from the DNC that I had came up. I don't want to say too much to spoil the film, but so after writing that, images, I'd have that going through my head, and then I'd find myself going through my daily life of going to the grocery store and just continue on with daily things, and inside it felt like there was a thunderstorm, and I thought, I'm probably not alone in this.
Yeah.
But I felt very alone, so I thought if there was any way that I could communicate how I was feeling, that maybe other women who had been through this might go, oh my gosh, that's me, I'm not alone either. It allowed me to claim my grief. It allowed me to acknowledge my grief. The feeling of your child, for so many women, it's so real. Like, you really do feel an energy that is of you but not of you. And so then when that energy stops, it can be very isolating and lonely and difficult to describe and difficult to feel valid in describing, because we live in a society that definitely gives a lot of the most credibility to what you can see, taste, touch, and feel with your fingers, and this is a much more emotional experience.
Mm.
So I hope that the film is like a little capsule that women can go, oh my gosh, yes, that's how I felt, that's how I felt, and then maybe turn to their partner or to their family or to their friends and go, that's how I felt, and their friends can go, I understand a little better, and maybe not feel quite so alone.
Episode 6 brought us author Catherine Keating, who wrote There Was Supposed to Be a Baby. She shared the following.
I couldn't just go get pregnant again. It wasn't another time when I could think that, that it was all going to be fine. I really had to do some deep work, and I knew it. So I ended up making my plan for how I was going to heal, and that is what became this book. I remember still the day I decided to make my inspiration list. I was just sitting there, and the sunlight was coming in our big window, and I knew, I was like, I need to do something. I'm a doer. I have to be active about things. I need to do something here, because this is just not, it's just not going to go away. So I remember the bright green piece of construction paper I got out. I got out a big box of Crayola 64s, and I wrote down literally like everything I could think of that provided any sparks of inspiration, joy, heart, you know, anything like poems, songs, music, just fun stores that have, you know, interesting local art, whatever, outdoor hikes, anything. And I wrote it all down, and I posted it on my wall, and I just promised myself I would choose one thing off that list a day. I would get out of bed and go do one of those things. And it really started to, it worked. Like, it really, really worked.
Yeah.
And I noticed that there were things on it that addressed different parts of myself. You know, some things were like, go for a walk, which is a physical activity. Some things were like, listen to, you know, whatever favorite song, which for me, music is really emotional for me. So that would let loose this torrent of emotion. And so that was the emotional release that I needed. And then some things would be like my yoga, a yoga class or a meditation or something very spiritual for me. So it was addressing healing on those levels, on the mind, body, spirit. And I found that all of those, as I was doing small things for each, it was strengthening the whole picture, my whole being, and I just, you know, I just started to feel so much lighter, healthier than I had in years. And so I thought, well, I need to share this.
In episode 7, we were joined by doula and lactation counselor Wendy Cruz Chan.
Here in New York, there's a huge, you know, there's a lot of resources where we could donate our breast milk to, such as milk banks, hospitals for preemie babies in a NICU. I personally donate my breast milk to local moms in like this super secret Facebook group where doulas have access to it here in New York City to find what mothers are in need of donor's milk and who we could personally connect them to donor's breast milk. And that's how I was able to find the 6 recipients so I could donate my breast milk to.
Wendy also shared some advice and spoke about what she did after losing her son to stillbirth. Here's what she had to say.
Seek help. Don't be ashamed of what you go through. Embrace it. Embrace it and accept it. That's what I learned. Me and my husband, we seek professional grieving therapists. That helped us out a lot to help us learn how we should grieve and how we deal with the feelings, the emotions that we're going through, what we're experiencing. Talk to your friends, surround yourself with people who, especially those who have experienced similar experience that you have went through, so you could relate to that person or that person could relate to you, and you could feel that much more comfortable to talk about it. And that's what I did.
In episode 8, I interviewed myself as a gestalt exercise. And here's just a quick snippet from that talk.
Returning to a more regular meditation practice would be a great tool for me right now. It's something that I haven't been doing as regularly as I like to lately, and I do find that it makes a big difference for me. So I think returning to that would be really wonderful. I think continuing to journal. That's been a really powerful tool for me in working with and dealing with fears arising so far. And more exercise, too. I find that when I'm physically active, my body can just kind of work out some of this stuff almost on its own. Especially if I'm going on longer walks out in nature, it just sort of naturally works its way out physically, emotionally, mentally, everything. So yeah, I think since the weather's gotten a lot colder where I live, it's, you know, even right now it's mid-afternoon and the grass outside is still all covered in frost where it's shady, so it's quite cold here. And I tend to avoid the cold, but I think if I just start bundling up extra warm and making a point to get out, especially on days like today when it's sunny out, I think that would be a very powerful tool for me.
And then, of course, in episode 9, we spoke with Jennifer Massoni Pardini of the Chainlink Heart Project about her multiple losses. Here's a bit of what she had to say.
Once I was going through it, sort of in a fog, it was fog, but it was also clear. You know, when something this vital and this monumental is happening to you, you know, everything else sort of falls away. Nothing else was a problem, so to speak. You know, as I was an innocent pregnant woman, I was worried about, well, how am I going to get the baby things I need in Chile? And which, of course, is not a problem. They have babies everywhere in Chile, you know, like that's, that's fine. I think we, you know, pregnancy is a commodity in our culture. You know, it's about things and gear and what your baby needs. When your baby needs love, that's about it. Yeah. Certainly there are economic things we need and whatnot. I don't want to discount that, but everything clarified. And I think it had to, in order to travel towards this decision that we had to make, you know, there could be nothing else that I could hold in my mind besides our son and what he needed from us. So I don't think there was room for pity. I don't think there was room for even anger at that point. I really didn't get angry for a long time. If anything, I just wanted I wanted love and compassion for him. I wanted, you know, I just wanted sort of anything petty to go away. And maybe eventually strength and power came out of that, but it definitely didn't feel actively like strength or power at the time.
Yeah.
You know, I think that really comes with your healing process.
Mm-hmm.
And how you do choose to sort of look at your story and your journey. These may be rare in terms of what happened to my son. You know, only 3 to 4 out of 10,000 babies are born with this condition every year around the world. But if it's miscarriage, it's quite common. You know, I had a miscarriage 5 weeks after losing my, or 5 months after losing my son.
Yeah.
And that puts me in a pool of 20% of pregnancies, not just 20% of women, but 20% of pregnancies. So that's more than 20% of women who will be pregnant.
Yeah.
So these are common stories. It's almost like, why not me, right? It could happen to anybody.
Yeah. And statistically, it's going to happen to people.
Right, right.
And that's the summary of interviews from our 9 episodes so far. I look forward to sharing many more with you in 2017. We have a few quick announcements to share. As I mentioned, we have a new reward document up on the site for all patrons giving $3 or more per month. It's easy to unsubscribe anytime, so if you're on the fence about it, try it out for a month and see how it is for you. We just had a call last week with trauma therapist Persephone Maywald, and we have an upcoming call with grief therapist Natalie Himmelrich. Technically, the talk with Natalie is for people who have already joined Patreon, but if you join before 2017, I'm glad to invite you to join the discussion too. And now we have our baby names listing. All Tiny Giant Losses patrons have the opportunity to share their lost babies' names on the podcast. This episode, we're sharing 3 names. Luna Julianne, Silas Lane, Genvezig Merlin James. These babies were lost. They're still loved. Thank you for joining me for the Tiny Giant Losses podcast. If you found this episode to be healing, you can learn more about Tiny Giant Losses and find many more resources to empower your own healing journey at tinygiantlosses.com. For even more updates and resources, follow us on Twitter at Tiny Giant Losses and like us on Facebook at facebook.com/tinygiantlosses. Thanks, and until next time, I'm wishing you all the best on your baby loss healing journey and a new year of healing, grace, and wisdom in 2017.